Timescape, Cassette 10.
Chapter 38, October 12th, 1963. Penny's voice cut through to him.
As I was saying...
Huh? Oh, yes, go on.
Come on, you weren't listening at all.
She swerved the rented Thunderbird around a curve. The bay area lay below, and to the right, the twinkling of the bay hazed by fog.
Absent-minded prof.
Okay, okay. But he slipped back into a fog of his own as she zoomed them around the Grizzly Peaks hairpin turns above the Berkeley campus and then onto skyline. He glimpsed Oakland's sprawl, green dots of islands in the blue-gray bay, and San Francisco in alabaster isolation. They flitted behind stands of pine and eucalyptus, the trees making black and green grids against the brown of the hillsides. Penny had the top down. Cool air made her hair stream and float behind her head.
Mount Tamil Fuji,
she called, pointing at a short, blunted peak to the north across the bay. Then they were into the descent, brakes squealing and gears growling as she took them down Broadway Terrace. A forest musk enveloped them. They emerged from the tree-thick hillside and shot past a jumble of houses, a technicolor spattering. Traffic thinned as they neared her parents' house. Clearly a ritzy section with an appropriately posh name. Piedmont. Gordon thought of Long Island and Gatsby and yellow sedans. Her parents proved unmemorable. Gordon could not be sure whether this was due to them or to him. His mind kept drifting back to the experiment and the messages, rummaging for some fresh tool to pry up the lid of the mystery.
Come at it from a different angle, Penny had said once.
He couldn't get the phrase out of his mind. He found he could carry on conversation and smile and do the dance of guest and host without ever really taking part in what was going on. Penny's father was big and reassuringly gruff, a man who knew how to turn money into more money. He had the standard graying temples and a certain sun-baked assurance. Her mother seemed serene, a joiner of clubs and charities, a scrupulous housekeeper. Gordon felt he had met them before, but couldn't place them, like characters in a movie whose title won't spring to the lips. The invitation had been to stay over at the house. Gordon insisted on their staying in a motel on University Avenue, to put them smack in the middle of town, he said. But in fact, because he wanted to avoid the touchy question of whether they would share a room in her parents' castle. He wasn't ready for that issue. Not this weekend. Her father had heard about the Saul thing, of course, and wanted to talk about it. Gordon told him just enough to be polite, and then deflected talk to the department, UCLJ, and gradually to topics further and further away. Her father, Jack, he said with a warm, forthright handshake, just call me plain Jack, had bought some introductory astronomy books to learn more. This proved to be a handy time filler, as Gordon sat back and let Jack regale him with facts about the stars and the obligatory reverent awe at the scope of the universe. Jack had a sharp, inquiring mind. He asked penetrating questions. Gordon soon found his own rather elementary knowledge of astronomy was stretched thin. While the women cooked and chattered in the kitchen, Gordon struggled to explain the carbon cycle, supernova explosions, and the riddles of globular clusters. He summoned up smatterings of half-remembered lectures. Jack caught him in a few boners, and Gordon began to feel uncomfortable. He thought of Cooper's exam. At last they had a beer before lunch, and Jack switched to other subjects. Linus Pauling had just won the Nobel Peace Prize. What did Gordon think of that? Wasn't this the first time anybody had won two Nobels? No, Gordon pointed out. Madame Curie had won one in physics and another in chemistry. Gordon was afraid this would launch them into politics. He was pretty sure Jack was a member of the Disarmament Equals Munich School, pushed locally by William Noland of the Oakland Trib. But Jack adroitly sidestepped the point and ushered them into a steaming lunch of soup and well-marbled minute steaks. Jacaranda trees cloaked a portion of the view from the dining room. The rest of the windows gave a sweeping vista of bay and city and hills. The steak was perfect. See? Penny called. Ajax knows what you're going to do before you know yourself.
Gordon watched. The big horse shivered, snorted, blinked. She took Ajax from a standing position directly into a canter. Ajax bounded forward, puffing, ears pricked. She could get the animal to turn from either foot instantly and make him walk sideways, using only the pressure of her leg. She moved Ajax subtly, coasting around the corral. Gordon slumped against the railings.
Come at it from a different angle.
Okay. Ramsey had the biochem part wrapped up.
But that was a piece, not the whole puzzle.
The only other hard data they had was good old RA18536DEC3029.2, a drumbeat that led nowhere.
It had to mean something.
Gordon, I'm taking Ajax out on a trail ride. You want to come?
Okay. No riding, though.
Come on.
He shook his head, distracted. All he could remember now from the previous hour of her instruction was how to avoid getting kicked. When you walked behind him, you had to keep close to the rump, so the horse knew there wasn't room to get in a good healthy whack with his hoof. Brushing the tail apparently told the animal you were not a suitable target to relieve its minor irritations on, and it lost interest. This seemed doubtful to Gordon. It was an animal, after all, incapable of such foresight. He hiked along the ridgeline above her. RA18536DEC3029.2. They were just below the lip of the Oakland Hills. The rumpled brown landscape of Contra Costa County lay in the distance. The redwoods and pines around him were musty with a dry, swarming odor that he could not place. 263 KEV Peak. Point source in tachyon spectrum. A fine dust rose in puffs to greet his steps. It was late afternoon. Blue shadows lanced through the dusty clouds behind Ajax. Penny had come here every day when she was in high school, Jack told him. Gordon had considered making a wry joke about the Freudian implications of adolescent girls and horseback riding. He decided against it after a glance at Penny. Can verify with NMR. This horsey ambiance was far away from the sandlot ball he remembered as his only sport. Clop, clop of hooves, images of Gary Cooper or maybe Ida Lupino, a stately glide through aisles of looming redwoods. Serene. Gordon felt heavy and conspicuous. He plodded through the woods in black street shoes his mother had bought in Macy's, unsuited for this distant continent. He felt surrounded here by a naturalist he found foreign. RA18536DEC3029.2 RA18536DEC3029.2 Yea, verily. That night, when he made love to her back at the motel, Penny seemed changed. Her hips had got harder. Angular patterns of bone spoke to him through the thin cloak of flesh. She was tough, Western, a horsewoman. She knew that artichokes grew on a sort of bush, not on trees. She could cook over an open fire. He found her breasts more pointed, with pronounced nipples, rosy and soft, that puckered swiftly as he sucked on them. The east was east, and the west was west. Jack took her out Sunday in late morning to watch some walnutting he had invested in. In the walnut groves near Alamo, a mechanical tree shaker chuffed and wheezed. Its hydraulic arm yanked at the tree trunks, bringing showers of nuts bursting from the sky. Men shepherded a contraption down the lanes between the trees, coaxing its engine. It flicked rubber flippers to the side, herding the nuts into ragged rows. A picker followed after. The walnuts were still in their dappled green husks, and the picker scooped them up, leaving behind the twigs and dirt and snapped branches. Jack explained that this new method would pay off in no time.
A trailer carried the nuts to a gauntlet of brushes and wire nets where the hulls were rubbed off. A natural gas oven baked off any hulls that stuck. "Going to revolutionize the industry," Jack pronounced. Gordon watched the huffing machines and the gangs of men tending them. They worked even on Sunday. It was harvest. The walnut groves were soothing after the bleak scrub desert of Southern California. The long, shadowed ranks of green reminded him of Upper New York State. The clanking arm that strangled trees with their nuts was disturbing, though. A new robot west. "Can I borrow some of those astronomy books of yours this afternoon?" he asked Jack abruptly. Jack nodded, surprised, covering it with a baffled grin. Penny rolled her eyes and grimaced. "Won't you ever stop working, even for a weekend?" Gordon shrugged, daunted for a moment by her silent condemnation. He saw that she wanted this weekend to work, in some sense. Perhaps he and just plain Jack were supposed to strike up some sudden comradeship. Well, maybe they would, given the right occasion. But this weekend wasn't it. Gordon knew he had been drifting through it in a daze, distracted by the problem. Yet knowing the fact didn't change it. And whenever he did join in, he found himself misreading Penny's parents. He was acutely conscious of sleeping with their daughter. Sticking it to the Shiksa, yeah. What was the agreed-upon California way to deal with that fact? Politely ignoring the sleeping arrangements? He supposed so, and yet he still felt uncomfortable. The tree shaker grunted and yanked, bringing him out of his ruminations. He had been standing with his hands behind his back, his usual lecturer pose, staring at a clod of earth. Gordon looked up at the others who had moved off toward the car. Penny gave her father a wry, resigned look, gesturing at Gordon. Family signals. There was nothing in the indexes of Jack's books about Hercules. Gordon paged through them, looking for something about the constellations. There were star charts, seasonal views of Ursa Major and Orion and the Southern Cross. Students who had been reared under city lights needed a simple guide to the stars. Gordon was no different. He studied the lines connecting the stellar dots, trying to understand why anybody thought these looked like hunters or swans or bulls. Then a passage caught his eye. "Our own sun is in motion, just as all stars are. We revolve about the center of our galaxy at a speed of about 150 miles per second. In addition, the sun is moving at about 12 miles per second toward a point near the star Vega in the Hercules cluster. Many thousands of years from now, the constellations will appear different because of such motions of stars relative to each other. In Figure 8, the constellation..." Penny drove him over to the Berkeley campus. She had liked the idea of going for a drive around the area again, even though it meant seeing a little less of her parents. Her attitude changed when she saw that he did not want to stroll around the campus at all, and instead headed directly for the physics department library. The library was in a building next to the campanile, but Gordon refused to ride the elevator up and look at the view. He waved goodbye to her and went inside. "Solar motion, discounting the rotation about galactic center, can be adequately described as a cosine zero distribution. We are moving away from the solar antipex and toward the solar apex. Since the position of the solar apex represents an average over many local stellar motions, there are significant uncertainties. RA can be specified only to 18-hour, 5-minute, plus or minus 1 minute. DEC to 30 degrees, plus or minus 40 minutes. Gordon blinked at the clotted sentences, doing arithmetic in his head. The musty library air carried a heavy, solemn silence. He found a worn copy of Astrophysical Quantities and checked the coordinates again. Solar apex, RA 185, plus or minus 1. DEC 30, plus or minus 40. He plucked a pencil from his shirt pocket and scribbled beneath it, ignoring the scornful look of a librarian. RA 185. 536, DEC 30.29.2. He walked out into a cooling autumn afternoon. On the Aircal flight to San Diego, he said, "The coordinates in the message match the solar apex. That's the point. To within the uncertainties in the present measurements, I mean." "That's what the plus and minus signs on top of each other mean?" Penny said doubtfully. "Right, right. No, I don't get it. That's the direction the sun, and the Earth with it, is heading toward." "Well, oy vey." "Huh? Well, that's what you say. Indicates surprise. Oy vey." "No, it means, well, dismay. Anyway, I don't say that." "Sure you do." "No, I don't." "Okay, okay. Look, what's this mean, Gordon?"
"I haven't got any idea." He lied.
Chapter 39, October 14th, 1963.
"Gordon, this is Claudia Zins. I wanted to let you know we lost the anomalous effect this weekend. Did you?"
"I wasn't running, sorry."
"Well, it would have been a waste anyway. The funny stuff simply faded out."
"It comes and goes like that a lot."
"We will continue trying, however."
"Good, good. So will I." Gordon spent an afternoon with star charts, plotting the motion of the point in Hercules. It fell beneath the horizon for a good portion of the day. If there were tachyons, whatever that name meant, they would come directly on a line between his NMR rig and Hercules. When the Earth was between him and Hercules, the particles would probably be absorbed. That meant, to get any signal, he had to run when Hercules was up above the horizon. "Claudia?"
"Yes, yes, I haven't called you because we have not seen..."
"I know, I know. Look, those coordinates you and I got, they're in the constellation Hercules. I think we might have more luck if we only observed at certain times. So, say, have you got a pencil? I just worked these out. I figure between 6 p.m. and..." But neither Columbia nor La Jolla could pick up any effect at the times he calculated. Could there be some other interference? It would further complicate things, but what was the cause? Gordon went back and estimated the times when he or Cooper had recorded signals. Most of them matched times when Hercules was in the sky. In some cases, though, there was no record of when the observations were made. A few others seemed to correspond to times when Hercules was definitely below the horizon. Gordon had always liked Occam's razor. Entities are not to be multiplied beyond necessity. It meant that the simplest theory which explained the data was the best. The interference theory was simple, but it had to take care of the times when Hercules was below the horizon somehow. Maybe those points were mistakes, and maybe not. Rather than reach any conclusion, Gordon decided to keep trying and let the data sort themselves out. Gordon had been teaching classical electricity and magnetism, using the standard Jackson text, for only a few weeks. Already his lecture notes were running out, and he was behind in grading the problem sets he assigned. The familiar blizzard of demands fell on him. Committees, office hours with students, reading over Cooper's work and talking to him about it, arranging seminars. The first-year graduate class looked good, as far as Gordon could tell from the problem sets they handed in. Burnett and Moore were sharp. The middle of the pack, Swedler, Kuhn, Littenberg particularly, had promise. They were the twins from Oklahoma who did uneven work and had an irritating way of cross-examining him. Maybe he was a little touchy these days, but they... "Hey, got a minute?" Gordon looked up from his grading. It was Ramsey.
"Sure."
"Look, I wanted to talk to you about this press conference Hussinger and I are doing."
"Press conference?"
"Yeah, we're going to announce our conclusions. Looks pretty big." Ramsey stood quietly by the doorway without his usual animation.
"Well, good, good.
We wanted to use that chain configuration I figured out. You know, the one I thought you and I would publish together.
You need to use that?
Well, it makes the case stronger, yeah. How will you explain where it comes from?
Ramsey looked pained.
Yeah, that's the catch, isn't it? If I claim it's from your experiment, some people are going to think the whole idea is bullshit.
I'm afraid so.
But still, look.
Ramsey spread his hands.
It makes the argument more convincing to see the structure.
No. Gordon shook his head vigorously. I'm sure you'll be believed solely on the basis of the experiments. It's not necessary to drag me into it.
Ramsey looked doubtful. It's a nice piece of work, though.
Gordon smiled.
Leave it out.
Leave me out, okay?
If you say so,
sure.
Sure,
Ramsey said, and left.
To Gordon, the conversation with Ramsey was amusing, a distant reminder of the real world. To Ramsey and Hussinger, publishing first was the crucial step. Holding a press conference put their seal on the work even more strongly. But Ramsey knew nothing would have happened without Gordon, and the thought bothered the man. Proper procedure was to first get Gordon's consent to separate publication, and then to write a warm acknowledgement at the end of their paper. Gordon told Penny about the conversation that evening, and about how strange the whole process seemed to him now. It was getting the result that made science worth doing. The accolades were a thin, secondary pleasure. People became scientists because they liked solving riddles, not because they would win prizes. Penny nodded and remarked that she understood Lakin a little better. He was a man past the point of finding anything truly fundamental. Scientific invention normally trickles away past the age of 40. So now Lakin clung to the accolades, the visible talismans of accomplishment. Gordon nodded.
Yeah, he said.
Lakin's an operator without real eigenvalues. It was an obscure physicist's joke, and Penny didn't understand it. But Gordon laughed for the first time in days.
Hey, gee, you're still here? Cooper said from the laboratory doorway.
Gordon looked up from an oscilloscope face.
Trying to take some new data,
yeah.
Crap, it's late. I mean, I just dropped in after a date to pick up some books and saw the light. You been here since I left for dinner?
Yes, I got something out of the vending machines.
Jeez, that's terrible food.
Right, Gordon said, turning back to the equipment. Cooper ambled over and noticed the resonance traces scattered on the lab bench.
Looks like my stuff.
Close, yeah.
You're doing indium antimonide? You know, Lakin asked me about your taking so much time on the rig here. Wants to know what you're doing.
Why doesn't he come ask me?
A shrug.
Look, I don't want to get...
I know.
After a few neutral comments, Cooper left. Gordon had been carrying out his normal duties for the last week, and then spending the evenings taking data, listening, waiting. There were random yellow jitterings among the traces, but no signal. All eroded into noise. The pumps coughed. The electronics gear gave an occasional hot ping. Tachyons, he thought. Things faster than light. It made no sense. He had taken up the idea with Wong, the particle physicist, and got the conventional reply. They violated special relativity, and anyway, there was no evidence for them. Tachyons gliding across the universe in less time than Gordon's eye took to absorb a photon of the pale, watery laboratory light. These things went against reason. Then there came a flutter of interrupted resonances. Gordon had worked out a faster way of compiling the curves, and he could extract the Morse code portions almost immediately. Threaten ocean. A few moments later, another sputter of interruptions. Cambridge, Cavendish, Labo. And then a blur of noise. Gordon nodded to himself. He felt comfortable working here alone, monk-like. Penny didn't like his long hours here, but that was a secondary issue. She didn't understand that sometimes you had to press on,
that the world would yield if you just kept at it. When the scope face cleared, he took a break. He walked the silent corridors of the physics building to shake off a sleepy daze. Outside Grunkein's lab was a big sheet of computer paper with a disheartened graduate student scrawl at the top. An experiment may be considered a success if no more than 50% of the observed measurements must be discarded to obtain a correspondence with theory. Gordon smiled. The public thought of science as an absolute sure thing, money in the bank. They never knew how some slight error could give you wildly wrong results. Below the top scrawl were penciled in contributions from other students. Mother Nature is a bitch. The probability of a given event occurring is inversely proportional to its desirability. If you fool around with something long enough, it will eventually break. One fudged curve is worth 1,000 weasel words. No analysis is a complete failure. It can always serve as a bad example. Experience varies directly with the equipment ruined. He got himself a Hershey bar and went back to the lab.
Jesus, Penny said in the morning. You look like something somebody took out of an old trunk.
Yeah. I got a class next hour. What's in the larder?
Lard. That's what the fuck's in the larder. Fucking lard.
As you're always putting it, come on.
Cereal, then.
I'm hungry.
Two bowls, then.
Look, I had to work.
Not getting promoted really shook you up, didn't it?
Bull. Just bull.
Bull. Right.
I've got to find out.
That woman zins. That's all you needed.
For confirmation, yes, but we don't understand it. Gordon rummaged for shredded wheat. He put the toasted rolls into a bowl and threw the packet into the trash. At the bottom of the trash container was an empty half-gallon of Brookside Burgundy.
You staying there tonight?
Penny said. Yeah.
I got a letter from my mother.
Uh-huh.
They thought you were really pretty weird.
They're right.
You might have tried.
I was trying to do it cool and wasp.
Cool and dopey.
I didn't know it was that important.
It wasn't. I just thought.
Look, there'll be other times.
You got a call.
I mean, maybe around Thanksgiving.
Uh-huh.
San Francisco. We didn't see much of it.
It was from New York.
He stopped slurping shredded wheat.
What?
The call. I gave him your office number. I wasn't in my office much.
Who was it?
Didn't say.
You ask?
No.
Next time, ask. Yes, sir.
Oh, crap. The San Diego Union headlined, Viet Regime Toppled. Gordon looked at the pictures of corpses in the streets and thought about Cliff. The Union said it was a straightforward military coup d'etat. Somebody had caught Ngo Dinh Diem and shot him in the head, and that was the end of it. The Kennedy administration said they had nothing to do with it. They deplored the whole thing. On the other hand, they said, maybe this cleared the way for some true progress in the war there. Maybe so, Gordon thought dimly, and threw the paper in the lab trash can. Claudia Zins had picked up some of the same fragments, but not all. The noise level came and went. Gordon wondered if there were some other effect at work, beyond the matter of Hercules being visible. Maybe the beaming of the tachyons was inaccurate. That would explain why the signal came and went. He held these ideas in his head, together with suspicions and hunches. During the long evenings of watching the scope, he turned them like pieces of a jigsaw puzzle, fitting edges together. His hunch was based on the solar apex number, and it led to a conclusion about the messages that he found difficult to believe. He tried to steer clear of the conclusion. There might easily be another explanation after all. On the other hand, Wong had mentioned the causality argument against tachyons, so there was at least some crude connection. Occam's razor did not seem to be of much use here. The whole thing had an Alice in Wonderland quality about it, which meant, he reminded himself, that it was even more important to stick to the facts, the digits, the hard data. Give me a solid set of numbers and I shall rule the world, he thought to himself, and laughed out loud. He had dozed. He shook himself and rubbed his eyes. Halfway through the gesture, he jerked his hands away and stared at the chart recorder. Jagged lines. The lyric curves of the resonances were shot through with sudden interruptions. He fished backwards through the spool of tape. If he had missed the key-in point... But no. There it was. He began to decode. Neurom 1-OL-AJ, write, quote, message received La Jolla, unquote. On paper, place in safety deposit vault, San Diego First Federal Savings, in name of Ian Peterson. Must guarantee box held 36 years. Sending this to check receipt of TRANSWRSODRMCJ, resulting dinoflagellates and planktonic AVSDLDU AHXNDUROPFLM. The clerk peered at him. Yes, it's true, we do have free safety deposit boxes, but until the end of the century? He raised his eyebrows. You offer that, don't you? Well, yes, but... In a public advertisement? Certainly. However, the intent... Your ad says I get a safety deposit box if I maintain a minimum balance of $25, right? Indeed, but as I was beginning to say, we intend this as an initial offering to encourage clients to set up accounts. The firm certainly does not mean for customers to hold these indefinitely, solely on the strength... Your ad doesn't quibble the way you do. I don't think you're... I'm right, and you know it. You want I should ask for the manager? You're just starting out here, aren't you? The clerk's face gave away nothing, as he thought. Well, you do seem to have uncovered an aspect we had not anticipated... Gordon grinned. He took the yellow sheet of paper out of an envelope and put it on the desk. Chapter 40, November 3rd, 1963. Hello?
Gordon? Gordon, is that you?
Uncle Herb, Gordon hesitated and looked at his office telephone receiver in puzzlement, as though his uncle's voice were out of place here.
You're working so hard you can't go home at night?
Well, you know, some experiments.
So the girl said.
Gordon smiled. Not lady, his usual term. No, Penny was a girl. And his mother had undoubtedly told Uncle Herb what kind of girl.
I'm calling about your mother.
What? Why?
She's crank.
What? Kronk?
Kronk. Sick. She's been sick for quite a while.
Not when I was there.
When you were here, too, yes, she was. But for your visit, she did not let on.
Good grief. Look, what's wrong?
Something with the pancreas, they said. They're not sure. These doctors, they never are.
She said something about pleurisy a long time ago.
That was it. That was when it started up with her.
How bad is it?
You know, doctors, they don't say yet, but I think you ought to come home.
Uncle Herb, look, I can't just now.
She has started asking about you.
Why didn't she call?
Know her, the trouble between you two?
We weren't having any bad trouble.
You can't fool your uncle, Gordon.
No, really, I didn't think it was.
She thinks so. I think so, too, but I know you don't listen to your old dummy uncle's advice.
Look, you're no dummy.
Come see her.
I have a job, Uncle Herb. Classes to teach. And these experiments now, they're very important.
Your mother. You know she won't call you, but...
I would if I could, and I will. I will as soon... It's important to her, Gordon.
Where is she now?
In the hospital. Where else?
For what?
Some tests, he admitted.
Okay, look, I really can't get away now, but soon. Yes, soon I'll come.
Gordon, I think now.
No, look, Uncle Herb, I know how you feel, and I will come. Soon.
Soon means when?
I'll call you. Let you know as soon as I can.
All right, then. Soon. She hasn't heard from you much lately.
Right, I know. Soon. Soon.
He called his mother to explain. Her voice was thin and reedy, shrunken by the miles. She seemed in good spirits, though. The doctors were very nice. They treated you with consideration. No, she had no problem with the hospital bills. He was not to worry about that. She played down the idea that he should come see her. He was a professor. He had students. And why spend all that money for only a few days? Come home at Thanksgiving. That would be early enough. That would be fine. Uncle Herb was a little over-concerned. That was all. Gordon said abruptly into the telephone, "Tell him for me I'm trying not to be a potzer here. The work is at a crucial point." His mother paused. Potzer was not really a polite word. Too close to putzer. But she let it go.
"That he'll understand."
"So do I, Gordon.
Do your work."
"Yes."
The university had arranged the press conference for Ramsey and Hussinger. There was a three-man team from the local CBS station and the journalist who did the "A University on Its Way to Greatness" feature, as well as San Diego Union and Los Angeles Times men. Gordon stood in the back of the hall. There were slides of the results, pictures of Hussinger beside the testing tanks, graphs of the breakdown in the ocean ecosystems. The audience was impressed. Ramsey fielded questions well. Hussinger, an overweight, balding man with quick, black eyes, spoke with rapid-fire intensity. A reporter asked Ramsey what led him to conjecture that such terrible things could come from such an obscure cause. Ramsey skirted the issue. He glanced at Gordon and then made a vague remark about hunches coming out of nowhere. People you knew or worked with said something, and then you put them together, all without really knowing where the initial spark was from.
"Oh," the reporter asked, "was someone else at UCLJ working on things like this?"
Ramsey looked uneasy.
"I don't think I can say anything about that at this time," he murmured.
Gordon slipped out the back before the conference broke up. Outside, the air seemed smoky. He breathed deeply, felt dizzy, and coughed harshly. The shafts of sunlight had a shifting, watery look. Hercules fell below the horizon around 9 p.m. now, so Gordon could shut down the rig reasonably early. There was still decoding work to be done, though, if he found any interruptions of the NMR traces. He got home reasonably early most of the time, for about a week. Then the noise level began to rise again. He received sporadic signals. Hercules was in the sky from mid-morning until night. He spent the day taking data. Then, after 9 o'clock, he would prepare his lectures and grade papers. He began to stay later and later. Once, he slept in his office overnight. Penny looked up with surprise as he unlocked their front door.
"Well, well, run out of electricity?"
"No, just finished early, that's all."
"Jesus, you look terrible."
"A little tired."
"You want some wine?"
"Not Brookside, if that's what you're drinking."
"No, it's Krug."
"What was that Brookside doing around here?"
"For cooking."
"Uh-huh." He got some wine and some corn chips and sat down at the kitchen table. Penny was grading essays. The radio was blaring AM music.
"Don't know much about history."
Gordon frowned.
Don't know much biology.
Christ, turn that off.
Don't know what a slide rule is for.
Penny tilted her head to listen.
That's one of my favorites, Gordon.
But I do know that I love you.
He got up suddenly and savagely snapped the switch over. Bunch of know-nothing bullshit.
It's a pretty song.
Gordon made a dry laugh.
Christ, what's with you?
I just don't like shit music playing decibels too high.
I think you're feeling screwed by the Ramsey and Hussinger thing.
No, that's not it.
Well, why not? You let them take all the credit.
They deserved it.
It wasn't their idea.
They can have it. What I'm working on is a lot bigger than that.
If it works out.
It'll work. The signal is coming through better.
What does it say?
Some biochem stuff. More specs on tachyons.
That's good. I mean, what can you use it for?
I'm sure it's going to fit together as soon as I get enough pieces. I've got to find just one clear statement that confirms my hunch, my guess, and that'll lock it up.
What's your hunch?
Gordon shook his head silently.
Come on. Look, you can tell me.
No. Nobody. I'm telling nobody until I'm sure. This whole thing is going to be mine. I don't want word leaking out before I can nail it for sure.
Christ, Gordon, I'm Penny. Remember me?
Look, I'm not saying.
God damn, you're getting completely screwed up in the head, you know that?
If you don't like it, you can leave me alone.
Yeah, well, maybe I will, Gordon. Maybe I will.
He found himself falling asleep in the day. He would jerk awake before the oscilloscope as though startled by some noise, instantly afraid that he had missed some data. He taught his classical electricity and magnetism class as though in a dream. He would drift from one blackboard to another, jotting down formulas in what he thought was a neat, readable print. He spoke facing the class, but he gave the impression of carrying on an internal debate with himself. Occasionally, after lecture, he would glance back at the boards before leaving and be shocked at the cluttered lines of nearly unreadable scribbles. Lakin avoided talking to Gordon about anything other than routine laboratory operations. Cooper, too, stayed in his small student's office and seldom sought out Gordon, even when he was blocked on a particular point. Gordon rarely went up to the physics department office on the third floor anymore. Secretaries had to seek him out in the laboratory. He brought his own lunch in a bag and ate it there, tending the NMR apparatus, fighting the recurring signal noise problems, watching the jiggling yellow lines of the resonance curves.
This ends side 1 of cassette 10. Please turn the cassette over and start side 2 at the same point.